This is in the news for December 20th, 2005. I'm Scott Berguin from KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. First story today. IMF approves debt relief for poorest countries. It's from the Telegraph in the United Kingdom. You can get more on this and other stories at telegraph.co.uk. The International Monetary Fund has approved more than $3 billion worth of debt relief for 19 of the world's poorest countries. $3.3 billion were allocated today as part of a wider debt relief package endorsed by President George W. Bush and other world leaders at the G8 summit in Gleneagles last July. At the summit, world leaders voted to cancel the debts of 18 of the poorest countries owed to the World Bank, the IMF, and the African Development Bank. The new decision followed a campaign by debt relief advocates to ensure that the countries did not fall foul of IMF criteria for relief. Campaigners said that six countries had faced delays to their relief, including Mauritania, Ethiopia, Madagascar, Nicaragua, Rwanda, and Senegal. Today, the IMF board approved all except Mauritania, with Thomas Dawson, a spokesman for the organization, predicting that the latter would qualify for relief in a matter of weeks. He said the $3.3 billion in debts owed by the 19 nations will be canceled once the IMF has the approval of all 43 rich countries that have contributed to an anti-poverty trust set up by the fund. He said, quote, "So far we have 37 consents. We're quite hopeful we'll get the remaining six in the next few weeks," end quote. Max Dawson, policy advisor for Oxfam, said, quote, "The IMF realized that the world was watching, and they couldn't deny millions of people the promised debt cancellation," end quote. Again, that's from the Telegraph in the United Kingdom at telegraph.co.uk. The next story is from Editor and Publisher at editorandpublisher.com. New twist: Guild leads effort to buy eight Knight Ridder papers. This is by Joe Strupp, published on the 22nd of December. Leaders of the Newspaper Guild Communication Workers of America are seeking investors to purchase the eight Knight Ridder daily newspapers that are represented by the Guild, they announced Thursday. Guild President Linda Foley told E&P the effort was aimed at allowing the Guild shops under Knight Ridder control to be purchased by companies more likely to avoid severe cost-cutting that has plagued the industry. The proposal comes as Knight Ridder, which owns 32 newspapers, is on the selling block following demands from its largest shareholders that the quote-unquote, quote, undervalued company be sold. In a statement released this afternoon, Guild leaders said they had retained two advisory firms, Duff & Phelps Securities, LLC of Chicago, and Ownership Associates Incorporated of Cambridge, Mass., to work with the union to attempt a worker-friendly buyout of certain properties of the Knight Ridder newspaper chain. Foley said, quote, "We are looking to partner with some equity firms, and at least one has expressed interest. We think we can change the whole dynamic here. We believe an employee bid will enhance the value of these properties. With employee involvement in a buyout, there are often tax advantages," end quote. Henry J. Holcomb, president of the Newspaper Guild of Greater Philadelphia, CWA Local 38010, which represents employees at the Knight Ridder-owned Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News, praised the move. He said, quote, "We are working to avoid winding up with a buyer that doesn't know the vitality of Philadelphia market, and we jump to the incorrect conclusion, as Morgan Stanley reported Knight Ridder did, that there is no profitable future for the Daily News and a need to seriously diminish the Inquirer. Such mistakes would cause serious social and economic harm to our region," end quote. In addition to the Philadelphia newspapers, those being targeted for the Guild-led purchase include the San Jose Mercury News, St. Paul Pioneer Press, Akron Beacon Journal, Duluth News Tribune, Lexington Herald Leader, Monterey Herald, and the Grand Forks Herald. Foley said, continued, he had more to say, quote, "Our first order is to put together an acquisition company led by the employees as well as equity partners and a management team. The Guild would not own it outright." She said the acquisition company would tentatively be called, quote, "Value Plus Media," end quote. There is more on this story at Editor and Publisher at editorandpublisher.com. Next up, from Interpress Service News Agency out of Peru, Politics Peru, the usual suspects. This is written by Angel Paez. A mantle of corruption and impunity has begun to cast a shadow over the campaign for Peru's April presidential elections, despite the fact that the candidates have not even been officially registered yet. This is dated December 6th out of Lima. The presidential hopeful of the right-wing National Unity Coalition, Lourdes Flores, who is the front-runner in the polls, presented businessman Arturo Woodman as her vice presidential running mate. Woodman was not only closely involved with the corrupt regime of Alberto Fujimori from 1990 to 2000, but is also a close associate of banker Dionisio Romero, who faced charges for trafficking of influences. Two congressional commissions that investigated economic and financial crimes committed during the government of Fujimori found that Woodman was involved in four cases of corruption. In addition, it was Woodman who personally brought Romero to the offices of then-security chief Vladimiro Montesinos, considered the power behind the throne during the Fujimori administrations. Both Fujimori and Montesinos are in prison today, the former in Chile, where he is awaiting extradition to Peru on charges of crimes against humanity and corruption, and the latter in Peru, where he is being tried for a long list of crimes. Montesinos filmed hundreds of videos in his office showing how he bribed politicians, media owners, and others. One of the many video recordings that triggered the scandal, which brought down the Fujimori regime, showed Romero asking Montesinos to intervene in a legal case involving one of the clients at his bank. Although Woodman admitted that he took Romero to Montesinos' offices, he claimed that the two men, quote, never spoke of business or politics, end quote. However, on a video showing one of their meetings, Romero and Montesinos can be heard commenting on the need to lower taxes on wheat imports, another of the areas in which Romero has a business interest. The banker himself also testified before a congressional investigatory commission that he and Montesinos touched on political and business issues. Despite everything, Flores decided to put Woodman on her ticket. Ronald Giamatta said, quote, "Someone who has had such close ties to Montesinos should abstain from participating in politics, let alone run for vice president, no matter what party he belongs to." Ronald Giamatta is a former anti-corruption prosecutor and an investigator at the Legal Defense Institute, according to Interpress Service News Agency. But the allegations against Woodman are not the only ones that have tarnished the campaign for the elections in which President Alejandro Toledo's successor will be elected. Questions have also been raised about the running mate of former President Alan Garcia, who plans to seek a second term representing the Social Democratic Peruvian Aprista Party. Garcia announced that he would put retired Admiral Luis Gianpietri Rojas, a veteran naval officer who specialized in commando and intelligence operations, on his ticket. Gianpietri is a self-declared enemy of human rights organizations and a fierce critic of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which investigated the dirty war waged by the security forces against the insurgent Shining Path and Tupac Amaru revolutionary movement between 1980 and 2000. The former president has presented Gianpietri as an expert in security with ample combat experience while highlighting his democratic and personal credentials, but he neglected to mention that the retired naval officer was one of the two officers who ordered the June 1986 crackdown on a riot staged by inmates jailed for quote-unquote terrorism in the prison on El Fronton Island during the Garcia administration. Some 300 prisoners were killed in the bloody incident. There's more on this issue, as well as other topics, at ipsnews.net. That's Interpress Service at ipsnews.net. And finally, today, from Common Dreams News Center at commondreams.org, and from oneworld.net, written by Haider Rizvi, U.S. opposes litany of global treaties in 2005. This is dated Monday, December 26th. 26 years ago, the United Nations adopted a treaty that is often described by human rights experts as the International Bill of Rights for Women. Today, that treaty has been endorsed by more than 170 nations. However, while the entire industrial world fully supports the UN Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, the United States is the only developed nation that continues to oppose it. Opponents of U.S. ratification fear it might affect U.S. policies, but most women's rights groups in the United States and abroad reject this notion, says Ritu Sharma, director of the Washington, D.C.-based Women's Edge Coalition, an umbrella group representing 180 non-governmental organizations or NGOs. Quote, "There is no good reason why the United States is not ratifying the U.N. Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. It simply lacks the political will," end quote, to ratify the treaty, she adds. Consisting of a preamble and 30 articles, the treaty defines what constitutes discrimination against women and sets an agenda for national action to end abuse of women's human rights. But the convention called CEDAW, or CEDAW, is not the only international treaty that Washington is reluctant to sign on to. recently when the UN Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, voted to adopt a new treaty that protects cultural rights worldwide, the United States stood alone in its opposition. The treaty allows nations to maintain, adopt, and implement policies they deem appropriate to protect the diversity of cultural expressions on their territory. The U.S. rejected the treaty by arguing that it could have a chilling effect on the ongoing negotiations at the World Trade Organization. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice told UNESCO members in a letter in October, quote, "This convention invites abuse by enemies of democracy and free trade," end quote. And just a few days ago, when government leaders from around the world gathered in the Canadian city of Montreal to take further steps to curb global warming, once again the U.S. turned its back on the international community. Despite strong persuasion efforts from other nations, the U.S. persisted in its refusal to embrace the Kyoto Protocol, an international agreement setting targets for industrialized countries to cut their greenhouse gas emissions. Though responsible for some 35% of worldwide emissions, the U.S. pulled out of the treaty in 2001, saying that implementing it would gravely damage the national economy. Many treaty opponents argue, however, that transitioning the U.S. economy to emit fewer greenhouse gases would create jobs. The Bush administration has also called the Kyoto Treaty deeply flawed because it does not require developing nations to commit to emission reductions. The list of UN treaties that Washington opposes goes on and on. U.S. leaders continue to reject the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty on Nuclear Weapons, the treaty banning anti-personnel mines, a protocol to create a compliance regime for the Biological Weapons Convention, the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, the International Criminal Court Treaty, and the Convention on the Rights of the Child. Washington is also not complying with the Chemical Weapons Commission and the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, and refused to let the UN Human Rights Commission conduct a probe into the alleged torture abuse of prisoners at Guantanamo and other detention centers. There is more on this issue, again, at commondreams.org or at oneworld.net. This has been In the News for December 27th, 2005. I'm Scott Berguin of KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. I'll talk to you next time.